Welcome to Tales from the Dance Floor, a podcast exploring the lives and times of people from all walks of life who followed their passions and made careers out of DJing, producing, parties, dance culture, and the music industry. I'm Phil Morse from Digital DJ Tips. Let's get started. I'm talking to Mojax today, who you will know for sure if you've ever Googled any piece of DJ equipment with a view to improving or buying your first DJ setup, because Mojax is one of the most knowledgeable, careful and thorough reviewers of DJ gear online who I've ever had the pleasure to know. So Mojax, you are a lot of other things as well as that, which we're going to talk about in this hour, but welcome. Thank you for your time. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm very good. Yeah, very good. Tired, busy as always, but that's why we do it.
So you're just back from a trip. Let's start by you telling us about where you've just been.
I've just been to Taipei in Taiwan for the Red Bull Freestyle World DJ Championship Finals. DJ City, we're a media partner with them. So basically four of us, two camera guys, Styles, who's like the organizer, and myself, we're embedded with the Freestyle Finals for the whole week, covering the whole thing, getting involved in events going on. Styles hosted panels with people like Jazzy Jeff. And just generally spent it's like DJ summer camp. That's the beauty of the Freestyle event. It is all the competitors from around the world go over there for a whole week, hanging out with the judges, hanging out with people like us. And it's just an incredible experience. So yeah, barely recovered from that, really.
That sounds absolutely awesome. And you mentioned DJ City. Of course, some people might not know because people click things online and just get the info. They don't kind of see where it came from. You've been working with DJ City, who are one of the big DJ download pools for quite a while now. And that's the outlet for the reviews that people know you for, right?
That's right. Yeah, I've been with them for just over 4 years. It's fantastic because they, you know, obviously their business is the music pool, but they employ me as part of their contribution to the culture. You know, they don't make any money off what I do. You know, I'm not a revenue generator for them, but it's important for them to have me as part of what they offer to the DJ community. You know, they have lots of different things they do, like the cutting room things where DJs from a different city will come and all do a big cut session, things like that, the link ups, all that sort of stuff. And I'm another kind of cog in that wheel, if you like.
So it's funny, you know, we're talking here in 2019 about you working as a content creator, basically for a company that's job is to provide music to DJs. For those of you who don't know about DJ download pools, they're places where working DJs can get access to the latest music. In short, that's what they are. But all companies nowadays are media companies as well. They all have people making content for them. And that's what Mojax does. But I'm going to guess that, you know, when you were teenage Mojax, you wouldn't for a million years have thought that now, as a grown up, this is what you'd be doing, right? In 2019, a kind of like famous within the niche that we work in, guy, basically a personality, an online personality with the equivalent of a TV role. You know, this is what TV was a few years ago.
That wasn't ever on my agenda, that's for sure. I mean, I've always wanted to be a DJ since the age of, probably about the age of 8 or something like that. Like I've always wanted, even when, you know, before DJing was cool, I wanted to be a DJ. Like it's I have music in my soul. My parents weren't particularly musical. Like I read interviews with people and they're talking about, oh, my mum had this amazing Stevie Wonder collection and stuff. My parents didn't. They listened to rubbish. Christa Berg was on rotation in the car stereo all the time, you know. But I just fell in love with music from a tiny age. I had my own record player when I was 2, proper one, not a Fisher Price, you know, one of those. It was an old one. A lot of people won't remember these, but they used to get, it was a stereo that had just a radio in the front, and it was made of wood, like a wooden case. And there was an arm on the top of the turntable where you could put like 6 or 7 7-inch singles on there, and they would drop down one after the other. So one would play, then the next one would drop down on top, and then it would play that one, and it would keep going through that. Had one of those when I was 2. I had a standing order with the local record store for Shakin' Stevens new releases. I would get those every time they came in. I'd go and spend my pocket money on Shakin' Stevens new record. I loved Boney M and ABBA and things like that. That was, you know, when I was two. So I've always loved music, but learned quite early on that I don't have any talent for creating music. I don't have a very musical ear. I tried various instruments a little bit when I was a kid and never really got anywhere with anything. Can't sing, can't really dance. But then I saw, and this I've told this story before, but it's worth retelling. On the Roland Rat show, Roland Rat was like a puppet rat who used to appear on breakfast television in the UK. And he had his own show at one point, like a Saturday afternoon kind of kid show. And I saw Derek B on there, the rapper. And he had the DJ behind him with the Technics 1200s, which I'd never seen before in my life. And I think that was probably the moment when I was like, I want to be that guy. I don't want to be the rapper. I want to be the guy behind the rapper with those turntables looking amazing. That's what I want to do. And then, yeah, it took me a few years. I started DJing when I was 13, doing school discos. My parents were both teachers, so they were, and then head teachers. So I ended up doing discos for my dad's school. It was a primary school. And then went on from there to kids' parties. Like, me and my mates were very good at doing kids' parties because we just didn't care about looking like idiots. So we would get involved and do all the dances and stupid competitions and stuff. And then weddings. And then eventually graduated to clubs when I was around 18. And I'd say never looked back, but, you know, didn't quite make it as a superstar DJ. But, you know, I did make a living as a DJ for a long time. And then here we are now, 2019, and I'm a YouTube sensation or something along
those
lines.
You are. And it's good. Don't be modest. You are. Okay, that's an awesome story. And I think a lot of people will definitely resonate with that. Certainly personally, my first gigs were school parties. Although interestingly, we ended up realizing that if we stuck one of the girls from our class on the door with a box, we could charge money. And that is my, you know, that's never left me. My days as a DJ were definitely as a DJ promoter. I found the two always interlinked. So I wanted to ask you about something that you just said, which is that you didn't have a musical ear and you found that you couldn't play instruments, but you really wanted to be the DJ. And, you know, this is something that I think in this age of DJ / producer type folks, who where the received wisdom is it's very important to make music if you want to get on as a DJ. I think this is all well and good. Times change. A lot of DJs are very talented producers and vice versa. But I also feel sometimes that there is a little bit of the art of DJing that is getting left behind, that's getting forgotten, because there is a difference between the two things, right? And when you say, I wanted to be the DJ, but I didn't have a musical ear, what is it you think that DJs have got that makes them musical people if it's not playing an instrument and having a musical ear? What do DJs bring to the table that's unique to DJing?
What I do have is an ear for a good record and an ear for what will work a crowd. You know, that's what I've got. I don't have a musical, like, I can't compose a bass line and things like that, but I have got an ear for what will work on a dance floor. And that I've always had from the beginning, really. And that's something also that you kind of train yourself to have over time. And that's why I always say, you know, doing mobile gigs is absolutely the best way to learn how the art of DJing, because actually that's a situation where nobody is there to hear you. They are there for the wedding or the birthday party or whatever. And you've got to make those people dance. And that's big pressure. You know, I'm nothing but respect for big producer DJs who get booked off the back of their productions, but that's a whole different kettle of fish walking into a club where everyone is there to hear you and you can put on your own record and people will go crazy because you made that record. That's a very different proposition from turning up to a 60th birthday party and just being part of the general milieu of the party, and you've got to try and make people dance who aren't necessarily there to have a dance. They might think about that at some point, but it's your job to persuade Aunt Ethel to get up on the dance floor and have a boogie. That's a very different thing. So I think that's the skill of DJing, is to be able to make people dance and choose the right music. I've always thought of myself as a selector first and foremost, in that kind of old reggae sort of sense. You know, I select good music, and over the years I've got much better at putting it together in an interesting way and in a slick and smooth way. But the fundamental of DJing is playing the right record at the right time. And I'm very good at that. You know, there's no doubt, you know, after 20 odd years of doing it, more than 20 years, I'm very good at choosing the right record at the right time.
Do you find that this ability to look at a room of people and say what is necessary to make this happen is something that still thrills you to this day? You say you've had a long career playing clubs. You're obviously involved with the DJ culture in a big way, certainly in a way that at that kind of gig, you can pretty much guarantee no one in the room would know what the hell you were talking about.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, do you find it still gives you a thrill? The idea of being able to pull off a difficult gig, calling on everything you've ever learned in order to do so.
Oh, absolutely. Every time. I mean, I think about, you know, the gigs that I do now, I've kind of got out of the whole weekly bar and club kind of grind that I did for 10 years. That was my full-time job. And now I do much more gigs that I kind of enjoy. But still, you know, like my New Year's Eve gig was at a local venue called Wylam Brewery, which is a fantastic venue in the middle of a park in Newcastle. It's brilliant. And the crowd there were very much an open kind of crowd. There was lots of mixed kind of ages and tastes. There was no specific genre that was advertised. And I still had to dig deep and go in different directions and pull stuff out that people might not think about. You know, I'm very much into, I don't want to be a classics DJ who just plays old school music. But at the same time, you know, we have what now, 70 years of recorded music to call upon in our crates if we want to. You know, we could go back to the 50s, the 60s, 70s, you know, millions and millions of records that we could be playing. So to just play the latest stuff, you know, I want to play curveballs from across the entire history of recorded music. I want to pull out stuff from the 70s that people don't hear very often, not like the obvious, like ABBA or something, but actually go for something deep that people are going to go, oh my word, I haven't heard that for years. That's an amazing record. So yeah, whatever situation you're in, that's always, you know, a direction to go is to look for something that's going to get people excited, but not the same thing they've heard from the last DJ they went to see. That's always a challenge, you know, to be unique and to stand out.
Do you feel from what you see out there in 2019 that there is a type of person who wants to DJ but who doesn't have that yet? They kind of get everything else first. It kind of happens backwards for them. They make a track because they've been messing around on, you know, on FL Studio longer than they've had decks, and they kind of get pushed into the DJing bit because of their music production, but actually they get pushed in quite green. They haven't got any of that stuff that you were just talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it before. I mean, you know, when I lived in London for quite a long time, and my best friend, my housemate at the time, used to work at Fabric London. And so I got the chance to go to Fabric London and hang out in the DJ booths pretty much every weekend for like 3 years, which was obviously a massive blessing and a massive education. But one of the things I saw there was a lot of producers who'd got booked because they'd had a popular record. I mean, obviously in Fabric terms, it was a popular underground techno record, but nonetheless, you know, they'd been booked basically because they'd got a big few kind of hits under their belt, and they were not very good DJs. You know, they didn't know how to read a room. They didn't know how to sort of do the ebb and flow. They were producers first, but the way that you get a booking, the way that you make money, especially these days now, the way you make money is not by selling records, because no one sells records anymore. You make money by doing live sets. And, you know, if you're not a live performer, then DJing is what you do. And so many people come through that kind of production pipeline into the world of DJing, and they're not very good DJs. And that's why I'm always super happy to see people like James Hype, who's really massive now here in the UK. He's absolutely blown up last year off the back of, he had a record called More Than Friends, which was huge, enormous hit, right? Massive. But he's come through as a DJ first and foremost. You know, he was doing the resident DJ grind for years and years, and then broke through. And he's an awesome DJ. Like, I see him play and he just blows me away every time. Four CDJs, looping stuff, chopping stuff up. He's incredible. But that's because he was a DJ first. He's always loved production. He's always been working on that in the background. But yeah, there's a difference between someone who's into DJing for the sake of DJing, as, you know, rather than just, this is how I'm going to make money off my records, is to go and do some DJ sets.
So you're an interesting DJ yourself, because you review the most cutting edge technical equipment that there is, and yet you are a real lover of DJing with the old fashioned 7-inch and being the selector that you just said, you know, you're DJing with 7 inches. It's not about big, long beat mixes and technical stuff, is it? It's about selecting the right 2.5, 3 minutes for right now and then doing it again in 3 minutes' time. Tell me about how you kind of square this in your head, these two sides of Mojax.
Well, I mean, what it is, I do spend my whole life playing with DJ technology. You know, and even before I started making videos, I was so deep into it. I mean, there was a time around about sort of 2012 when I was playing, you know, like Vodka Revolution in Newcastle, very sort of mainstream bar. And I'd be rocking up with a Pioneer DDJ SX, an iPad with Lima. I was doing video sets. I had like 5 different USB controllers hanging off my MacBook Pro. I've always been deep into that technology and I do love it. And I think it's important to push that technology forward. But then sometimes when I DJ, I just want to go back to that basics. You know,
so it's almost a release for you. Yeah. It's almost a, you know, it's these kind of technologies of the work, but getting back to the basics is the relaxation.
And it just takes me back to the essence of DJing. And that's the key. Yeah, especially playing 7 inches. Like you say, it's 3 minutes, next record. You haven't got time to mess around. You know, you can do, there are various technical levels you can go to with playing 45s. But in terms of it's just the pure essence of DJing. Right, I'm going to pick this track right now. It's going to work. That's it. And sometimes with the technology, it's easy to get a bit lost when there's so much in front of you. You know, I'm playing on like, you know, Denon Prime Series. I've got two turntables inside each player and I've got 4 channels and I've got effects and I've got loops and I've got everything else going on. It can get a little bit overwhelming at times and it's just nice to take it back to that simplicity, that basis of DJing, you know, even, and also I can't carry 12 inches anymore. They're too big and heavy. I'm too old for that. So that's a bonus. But yeah, in general, yeah, I like to balance both. You know, I'll do some gigs with DVS or with, you know, media players or whatever else. But then, yeah, it's good. Like probably about 50% of my gigs now are this 7-inch vinyl thing. And it's grown in popularity over the past few years quite a lot. I think a lot of people have started to push back against the sort of the rise of technology and you become a slave to it eventually. You know, I think about all that stuff I used to carry, you know.
Yeah, you're kind of right, yeah. I think. And that I was going to ask you about how people react to it, to seeing someone playing with basically something they understand, a needle hitting a record. And, you know, if they come over and ask for something and jog the table, the record jogs and it's very real. How do people react to that?
Well, not everyone does understand it. I mean, there is a generation. I mean, vinyl's kind of on a bit of a resurgence now, but there is a generation who, you know, probably like 18, 19-year-olds who've never grown up with vinyl in their house. You know, their parents didn't have vinyl. They just had CDs. And so some people don't understand. Like some people they'll come over and ask for a record and you'll say, well, I haven't got it. And they say, can't you just download it? Can't you put it on the laptop? And I don't have a laptop. I have this box of vinyl here. That's all I have. If it's not in there, I can't help you. And they can't really get their head around it because they're so used to this, you know, the world we live in now where everything's on demand, you know, YouTube, Spotify, Tidal, whatever it is, you can have whatever it is right now. And they're not used to that idea that, no, this guy's just got a bag of vinyl. That if it's not in there, you're not having it. So it's
interesting because I guess there's this big chunk of DJs somewhere in the middle that get that request thing going on in their lives.
Yeah.
The people who are very purist with a box of 7 inches or 12 inches or whatever, as you say, no way, can't happen.
Yeah.
And of course, the DJ artists who are playing their own tunes and stuff, no one would ever dream of asking them to play just kind of random requests.
Yeah.
I bet it must be quite nice not have to have that line up your sleeve when anyone asks for a request when you've got just a box of 100, 7 inches
or
whatever.
It is quite refreshing to be able to do that. I mean, I am a crowd pleaser. You know, I always like to make people happy. So I'm never averse to the idea of requests. Like if someone asks me for a request, that's, you know, I'm not offended by that. Some people get a bit over the top with it, but in general, you know, if people want to ask, I'll try and accommodate them. And if I can't accommodate them, I'll play something like what they want. You know, that's always the thing. I'm not someone who'd be precious. I've got my sound I want to play. I've got to play this set. You know, my bag of vinyl is always full of different genres of stuff. And, you know, so I'll always try and accommodate, but ultimately, the request culture is very different now. To what it was sort of 10 years ago, because people do assume that you've got access to everything that in the world. And that's made it just regular open format DJing. It's made it a very different kind of experience, I think.
So I wanted to ask you something else, because you are someone who's been doing this for quite a long time now. And of course, a lot of us end up with other commitments, with families and kids and so on. How easy have you found it to integrate a kind of life in DJing and a life in music and heading off to DJ conferences, stroke shows and stuff around the world with having a family and having that side of your life?
Well, the reason I got into making video content was because I had been at that point DJing full time for 10 years. I did a degree as a mature student, full time DJing after uni for 10 years solid. Like, that was my job. I just came out of uni, did a media production degree, which obviously came in handy later on. But at that point, all that being a student got me was the idea that I could spend time getting ready to go and do more gigs. So I just ended up being a full-time DJ for 10 years, and it was fantastic. Like, it was great. But I've never really had that kind of hustle to go out and really push my career to a different level. I'm not that kind of, like you said earlier, you know, you were always a promoter from the word go. I've never been a promoter. I'm terrible at promotion, promoting nights, promoting myself. I'm not very good at that stuff at all. And so I only ever got, you know, I got to the point where I had a good living from DJing. I was making all right money, but it was just local club and bar gigs. And I was DJing sort of 5 nights a week. You know, come sort of freshers week when the university start, I was sometimes doing 7 nights a week with, you know, obviously no pension, no healthcare, no anything else. And that's not a sustainable career forever. You know, you can't do that. You know, and it could be, I was DJing at one point, I think I was doing 3 or 4 nights in one venue. And I was looking at it going, well, if I fall out with the manager of this venue, I'm out 50% of my weekly income, you know, all of a sudden with no warning. So it's a very precarious lifestyle. So when I first had kids, I started to think, what else can I do in this kind of sphere, in this music industry? I can't be a producer still, not interested in that, don't have the talent for it. What can I do instead? And then I was watching stuff like your videos and DJBooth.net. Like, that was a good channel. There was a few, not many out there, DJ Tech Tools obviously at the time as well, watching stuff like that and thinking, I could give that a go. Let's try and do some, you know, equipment walkthroughs and things like that. And I had a few contacts in the industry from, I used to work in a DJ equipment retailer in their mail order department around about 2001, which was dex.co.uk, which is now sadly deceased. But yeah, I used to work there, so I knew some of the people in the industry, and I was like, right, let's just reach out to them, get a few bits sent through, let's try and do some videos, and started with my phone, and then moved on to a GoPro, and then moved on to a DSLR, and then went to freelance for DJ Tech Tools, did a bit for them, and then along comes DJ City. So it was all just came from, I can't live this DJ lifestyle forever. You know, some people, if you're like Tiesto or whatever, obviously at the extreme end, you know, that guy's making millions, he's touring the world, he's got 5 houses or whatever, that's fine. But I was just kind of making a living as a DJ, and I did love it, but that's not sustainable into your 40s or whatever. It's just not. So, you know, I had to make that decision. I didn't want to get a proper job. And the reason I have, if people have seen my videos, I have this kind of little mohawk thing on my hair. That is the sign that I don't have a proper job. That will stay there forever until I have to get a proper job, which hopefully will be never.
Just hit proper middle age and you're starting to lose your hair. Well, of course,
I'm already losing wishing it back. On you. The mohawk only goes about halfway back along my head. It can't go any further because there's nothing there to support it. Yeah, so that's my like symbol of, yeah, I'm still living a dream in some ways. You know, I don't have to go to an office and wear a suit and tie. Because I've done that, you know, in my 20s, I had a regular jobs. You know, part of that problem with not having that hustle was, you know, even living in London, hanging out at Fabric London all the time and things like that, I still never had it in me to, you know, I DJed less in London than I did when I eventually moved to Newcastle and started doing all that stuff then. You know, at that point, I just never really had it in me to go out and get those gigs and do the promotion. And so, yeah, this is, I've done plenty of horrible office jobs over the years, and DJing was just kind of a sideline, a hobby. But it's always been my passion, and it always will be until I die. So,
yeah, I had this conversation with several people. You are once a DJ, always a DJ. Yeah. That kind of is who you are. There's a wonderful way the Spanish, we live in Gibraltar, which is everyone speaks Spanish here in Gibraltar. Mm. Spanish have two verbs for to be, to exist. Ser and estar. Estar is like in the minute. You know, I'm mad at you right now, but yeah. I'm not mad all the time. You know, so they have this differentiation, right. And no one ever talks about themselves as a DJ with that one.
Yeah.
It's always the first one. It's always, I am a DJ. Yeah. I was born a DJ. I will die a DJ. And it's just, it's something that doesn't matter what you end up doing. If someone says, what are you? Oh, I'm a DJ who now runs a DJ school. I'm a DJ who now makes DJ training for a big record pool or whatever.
It's in your soul. To have any kind of lifespan as a DJ, it has to be part of your soul. It has to be something that you have a passion and a love for. And, you know, whatever kind of DJing you do, that's so important. You know, if you don't have that feeling, I'm sure there's thousands of people around the world who've sort of got their first controller and given it a try, and they've never really felt that kind of bug. And that's fine. Like, their passion will end up being something else. But I'm sure, you know, a lot of people, they get into it for the first time, and that's it. Then they are locked in for life. You know, they'll always have that in them.
You're making me think of the very first time that I DJed, and it wasn't, I hadn't even left my bedroom. I was the classic bedroom DJ with a twist, because the family bathroom was right next door to my bedroom. So I could put one loudspeaker out of my door and in the bathroom, and the other one stayed in my room as a monitor. I used the balance control as the mix between the monitor and the output. And I used to do the top 40. I'd tape every single track, mix off in time-honored fashion the DJ, and then swear when I unfortunately caught the DJ one week. And next week I'd do it again and try and cut it off in time. And then once I had everything assembled, I would just put this show together with a microphone that came free with a cassette player or something. And the reason I'm kind of recounting this story is that you review DJ gear, but we've already talked about your love of going back to basics. I run a DJ school, so we teach people on all kinds of DJ gear. But I think that passion means that you're going to use whatever's in front of you, right? It's almost like you just want the gear to get out of the way and let you get on with doing what has to be done, which is exercising your passion of sharing the music you love with everyone else, and hopefully they end up liking something they didn't think they'd like. Yeah. As a gear reviewer, do you have that same kind of mentality? And do you, if people say to you, you know, what should I use if I want to be a DJ? Is it important what I use? What's your kind of answer to that to them?
It's not important what you use when you first start out. What is important is that you, over time, identify what is going to work for you and what's going to suit you. Like, personally, I've got no love for virtual DJ, but I know there is a certain amount of DJs out there in the world for whom that is the perfect software and it does everything they want it to do. And when I'm approaching gear as a reviewer, that's always my thought is, who is this designed for? And that's generally why I'm able to see the good in most products, because actually it might not be designed for me and the way that I play, but it's going to work for somebody. And, you know, all these manufacturers, they're all out there trying to make good equipment. Nobody's trying to make rubbish and put it out to the world. But even things like the little Hercules controllers and stuff like that, not a big fan of those at all, but I can see how they work for, say, a young teenager who's just wanting to get into it. That's a perfect little thing because it's very playable, it's very tactile and everything else. The important thing to do is, as you develop as a DJ, is figure out what's, and, you know, watching channels like ours and reading reviews and playing with stuff as much as possible, you've got to identify what suits your style of DJing, what suits your taste, and go down that direction. And don't sort of go all over the place trying various different things. Like, don't buy a Traktor controller and then 6 months later decide you're going to move to Serato and everything else. Take time to learn what you have and get used to it and master it, and then make informed decisions about what's your next move. That's always really important. You don't want to invest loads of money in a certain platform and then realize, oh, I've made the wrong choice. You know, so whatever you start with, learn it, master it, get used to it, and then that will inform what you're going to go and buy next and what's going to be your next bit of hardware, your next bit of software. And then, to be honest, the time when I was kind of technically best, I keep going back to this sort of 2011, 2012 time, I was technically around that time, I was incredible because all I used was Serato DJ. That was it. I didn't use anything else. Serato DJ with loads of stuff added onto it. But I knew that software inside out. I knew everything about it. I knew all its quirks, all its little foibles. And I just owned that software. I was fully on point with it all the time. And so there is a lot to be said for mastering something and not trying to be this kind of gadfly going around between different platforms and stuff. You know, that's why, another reason why I'm into the vinyl sets right now is because that's a constant for me. You know, there's a stability to that. It's like, right, I know what I'm doing. Whereas if I take out the latest Traktor controller or the latest Serato controller, it's like, where's this button? Where's that button? And I do that as part of my testing process. But when I just want to have fun at a gig, I go with what I know, and that generally is, you know, a DJM mixer, a pair of Technics, and my records, you know, and that's why, you know, I feel most comfortable, and I feel I give my best performances at the moment with that setup because I'm comfortable with it. I'm laid back. So being comfortable with what you use is important, and then working out, because every software's got its own, you know, everything does something better than something else. If you're deep into MIDI mapping and sync and everything else, then really Traktor is probably the way to go. If you're into DVS right now, then probably Serato DJ is the way to go. If you're into obviously standalone, you know, it's either going to be Denon or Pioneer, you've got to make that choice. And if you're a you know, DJ who's on the mic all the time, isn't worried about doing crazy good transitions all the time, then maybe Virtual DJ is a better choice because that's a bit more automated. It will let you get on with entertaining the crowd in a different way than someone who's sort of head down over their Serato DJ setup. So yeah, you've just got to find your own path with equipment in the same way that you do with music.
So let's end off by then, you're a fully grown man now with a family of your own and a lifelong passion for music, and just turned 40. Congratulations, by the way. What do you wish you'd known about DJing or just in general when you were 18 that you know now?
I don't think there's much that I would have. My one regret in my whole DJ kind of life was that my nan passed away when I was, I think, 16. And she left me about £1,000, and I didn't spend that money on Technics 1200s. That's my one big DJ regret.
A DJ through and through, yeah. Aren't you?
I mean, that's it. I ended up, the worst part was I ended up wasting it. I think my parents told me I wasn't allowed to spend £700 on a pair of Technics, and I ended up just blowing it on random stuff over the course of 6 months. And I think I would have progressed a lot faster as a DJ if I'd have had Technics 1200s instead of my belt drives that I ended up getting.
Yeah, we've all been there. But I could have leapfrogged that.
You know,
yeah.
I think the thing I would have, anyone starting out, practice is so important. I DJed so much, even when I started out, you know, I was doing all these school, you know, me and my buddies used to do like 5 or 6 school discos at the end of every half term around different schools. You know, we were busy from the get-go, really. And I never practiced enough at home. And that's something I've learned from, again, being away in Taiwan this week, is that even the very best DJs in the world, like DJ Craze, you know, who is possibly the best DJ alive today, he practices all the time. Like, he constantly practices. And it's all about practice. And I never did practice enough in what I did. I always sort of thought my gigs were enough. And, you know, there was a point where I was DJing 20 hours a week, and that kind of is enough practice in itself. Mm. But outside of those times, like now I've come back from Taiwan and I'm thinking, right, I'm going to set aside one afternoon every week to just practice, to just play around with music and practice, because actually that's how the best DJs get to be the best DJs, is by putting in those hours and practicing. And I didn't do it enough in my 20s. I didn't do it enough in my 30s. And I'm not doing it enough now. And practice is the key. If you want to be the best at anything, you've got to put in those hours. And I've done my, you know, there's the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour rule. I've done my 10,000 hours. You know, I'm there now. I am a competent DJ. I'm pretty good at what I do. But there's always time for practice. There's always a need to practice and push yourself further. And so that's my one bit of advice. Just put in those hours, get your practice done. Even if you feel like you're at the top of your game, practice is still key. Another one, Andy C. Best drum and bass DJ in the world, Andy C. Without question, that guy practices like 2 hours a day or something. You know.
Well, on behalf of the DJ consumer community, I just want to say to you that you've put a lot of practice into the way you review and approach teaching people about DJ gear. And we, and speaking as someone who also does this, we really appreciate what you do there. Don't underestimate that. You've become extremely good at that. You probably are the best in the business at that, Mojax. So don't forget that.
Joey's kind of snipping at the heels there. Joey's excellent. I love it. I love Joey. I've always been inspired by your channel, though, Phil. That's the thing, right? You know, I watched your stuff in the early days. That's one of the channels that really inspired me to do it. And
well, I appreciate that. I'm a generalist. I've come to terms with my lack of enough practice in anything I do. But it is all about practice, though.
I watch now the videos that I did when I started out, and I watch the videos I've done today. I've now done over 200 videos for DJ City. That's 200 videos in 4 years. So that's basically one a week for 4 years. And the quality is way beyond what it was when I started out. And that's just practice. Again, it's all about practice and experience. And, you know, if you are passionate about something, you put in enough work, you can get good at it. And same with my videos now. I'm happy with what I do. I'm always looking to push it further and do more. And that's actually an area where your boy Joey is very much pushing me. We push each other, I think, Joey and I.
And I know you have good conversations behind the scenes.
That's it. He's a good dude.
Exactly how it should be.
Yeah, and we and everyone in this community supports each other, like you, DJ Works as well. You know, I'm friendly with DJ Tech Tools still. You know, we're all part of this big DJ community. It's worldwide, and the internet has made that even more so. And, you know, the DJ community in the big scheme of things, you know, compared to sports, you know, or things like that, it's not the biggest thing in the world. So everyone has to think and act like they're in a community together. And if everyone does that, then we can carry on making great things together.
That is a fantastic place to say thank you very much for your time, Mojax. And from Digital DJ Tips and from me, we wish you all the very best. We can't wait to continue watching what you get up to over the years to come.
Thank you for having me.